Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Heather is a nurse practitioner from UnitedHealthcare.
We meet patients wherever they live.
During a house call, she found Jack had an issue.
Jack's blood pressure was dangerously high.
It was 217 over 110.
So they got Jack to the hospital and got him the help he needed.
He had had a stent placed in his heart, preventing a massive heart attack.
If it wasn't for my guardian angel, I wouldn't be here.
Hear more stories like Jack's at unitedhealthcare.com. Benefits, features, and/or devices vary by plan. Area limitation and exclusions apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
And we are broadcasting live from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville today. It is Rahimi Harrison Grody with Matt Spiegel. Layla Rahimi coming up in just a little bit with Lawrence Holmes. Regularly scheduled Spiegel and Holmes show. That's just the way it's going down today. It is all for our Cubs On Deck Luncheon, which has been happening here. Thanks again to Nico Horner, powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago. Visit your local Verizon store today. We've got Jed Hoyer coming in here at 1:25 to talk about the Cubs. Tim, thanks for joining us. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm way better after the performance this weekend.
Tim, we all are. We always talk about teams like a get healthy game. This was get healthy for those of us who do sports talk radio, for the fans, and apparently for you. So what was the best part about Caleb Williams' performance against the Dallas Cowboys?
I'll tell you. So what's funny is a lot of people tell you, hey, don't read the comments. I'm always amused by what people comment on the YouTube video. And the best thing that someone in Bears, the Bears fan said, they said, Tim looked genuinely happy breaking down the concepts for the first time in his life. And that's kind of exactly how I felt, right? It was like there was a lot of what we thought I think we'd get with Ben Johnson, where I joke, they're concept dimes, where it's just like it's drawn up so perfect. We're going to get somebody wide open and we take advantage of it. That was exciting to see, but it was also exciting to see Caleb hit some of these shots where I've come on and we've said, we've kind of been critical of, hey, we got to hit this one or we got to throw a body up shot here. And even if our guy slows down, he's wide open. Let's just stick it on him. And he executed just that. I think when I really looked at it, the only miss that I was terribly concerned with was the screen, where it's like we motion to a screen and he dirts it. Simultaneously, it's like we can live with, right? Like you're going to have even the best dirt it every once in a while. So to me, it's one of those where I just walked away. I was super pleased. He was so clean with his eyes and his feet, where he was when it was, hey, I'm, my eyes and my feet are tied to my progression. He wasn't rereading anything. It was really good. And then you guys know that the clip of us that went viral with the whole, hey, we're reloading a bunch of concepts. Guess what? We didn't reload much, so all the Twitter coaches that were like, oh, hey, that's super common to reload concepts. I guess not, because we didn't do it at all, really. And the outcome was pretty dang good.
And I'm looking at this, and Tim, your face after week one was just, you were exasperated trying to figure out what was going on because you had expected so much more. But I think we're seeing a normal level of progress between a first-year head coach who's kind of gotten his hands on the coaching duties, and now a quarterback who is following his lead. Do you see the progress being right where you want it as far as these two guys working together?
100%. And I think that's what, I hate saying this because it's just going to bring up bad feelings, but you guys remember the London game last year where we felt like, oh, look, man, we made this huge jump. That jump felt so much more unsustainable compared to this week. This week feels like, consistent progress. Oh, hey, we're actually building on something. Whereas the London game last year just felt like, you know, it felt like our OC got boozed up and didn't actually call the game. It was someone else in the box, right? Like, that's what it genuinely felt like. It felt so different that you're like, okay, hey, is this sustainable? To me, it's like we're in such a better spot where we're consistently building versus last year. It felt like this jump was out of nowhere where we, you know, you said from week one to week two, he felt more comfortable. He looks way more comfortable in week three, and we got to some more creative concepts. So to me, I think overall we're trending in the right direction. Do I expect it to be perfect from here on out? Right? No, I don't think any of us do, but I do think what we're going to see is we're going to see limited operational mistakes. And I don't mean like pre-snap operation. I mean him actually working his eyes in the right spot on the progression based on the coverage. I think we're going to start to eliminate those errors. And then ultimately we're going to get what we all have been excited to watch, which is Caleb Williams and his talent executing within an NFL offense. And then of course, you know, you get the DJ Moore touchdown where it's like, that's Caleb Williams being special, right? Hey, scramble around in the red zone. DJ sits down, boom, we hit him. That's what we, you know, we know Caleb can do. And then if we can get him to operate the offense 80% of the time, this thing's going to be pretty awesome when it's all said and done.
It is my first time getting to talk to Tim Jenkins on this show. I'm usually on in afternoons, Tim. It's Matt Spiegel sitting in with Mark Grody and Marshall Harris. And I loved that whole answer you just gave about the natural progress is what it feels like with these guys. Because this is our third data point. It's not like we can sit and talk about the London game and other stuff. Like, this is new territory. That touchdown that you mentioned, the scramble to DJ Moore when he was special, that was the 19th play of that drive. And at no other point did he have to make a throw on the run. Like, he scrambled right, or not scrambled. He did a zone read keeper right. He did a zone read keeper left. They ran the ball out of the eye. They ran the ball from single set. They ran an end around. Like, they did everything on that drive with no operational mistakes. I felt like that extended drive was kind of a vision of what Ben is capable of and wants to do. And a lot of it's in the run game just to set up everything else.
Yeah, well, I think, like, when you see those end-around runs, to me, those are – everybody kind of jokes about them as, oh, hey, this is like a reverse. It's like a special play. You go watch Ben Johnson, it's really not. It almost feels like he runs OP around more than he runs actual OP, right? It's like he runs the around part of it more than he actually runs inside zone. It's just – that's how he dials it up. The one thing that I'll tell you about Ben Johnson is those 19-play drives, how great is it to watch us as the Bears go down and execute that? Also knowing that that's worst case scenario, right? That means we didn't pop any explosives and it still finished with, hey, 6 points on 19 plays to where you just controlled the entire game from that point forward. I think, yeah, that one was great. To me, the Loveland early in the game was awesome, especially when you peel it back on the tape, because I really talked about in the breakdown where Loveland gets rerouted. I mean, it was a real hit on the reroute. So you normally have this where on paper it's, hey, I'm going to 12, I'm going to midpoint this to 14. Loveland almost goes to the ground. He gets rerouted so hard, and his aiming point is still 14. And we got to remember, that's a rookie. That's great for him to still end up there. And then, oh, by the way, what did we talk about week one? We said, hey, Caleb needs to hang on to these shot plays a little bit more. What did he do? He gave it an extra hitch. Loveland gets there, delivers it to him. That, to me, was really great growth from a rookie tight end and a second-year quarterback on something that we said has to get fixed, and he fixed it from week one to week three. So to me, that play was kind of a perfect example of these guys really knowing the offense and executing exactly what we want.
And how about the first touchdown to Rome when Rome is open, having won his jam there at the line of scrimmage, and he just puts the arm up yep, like the mailbox, and he just throws it to him. It reminded me of the one to DJ in week one when he didn't just throw it to the open guy running down the sideline.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see me, but I just gave you a big old thumbs. That's perfect, right? Because that's what we wanted to see. We said, hey, we have a generational talent at quarterback. We know that it's hard to adjust that DJ Moore route, but we've got to do what, hey, we got to body him up. We got to put it on his numbers. Even if he doesn't score, it's fine. Let's generate the big play. And then everybody on Twitter says, no, that's impossible. That's too hard. It's a really hard throw. We can't do that. And then guess what? He does it in week three. So to me, it's like we are seeing growth from week one to week three exactly the way we wanted it. We've also like seen the hiccups in week two. And I think it's important to just be honest about what you're seeing, because it's in week two, it didn't feel great, right? It was a horribly run game. I feel like we were reloading too many concepts. Caleb wasn't executing it. Now in week three, it was like, dang, this was darn near perfect. If we just keep on progressing, keep on fixing the fixables like he did from week one to week three with, like you just touched on, the, hey, mailbox, though, this is wide open. I think the sky's the limit. And I just think it's important that we're noticing this growth and we're seeing them correct issues behind closed doors that we've said, hey, this is going to be an issue if we don't get it done. And they've gotten it done. So to me, I think this is like as optimistic as you can be since I started covering the Bears, which I know hasn't been as haunting as you guys talking about them. But I'll tell you, I lived through the field stuff and I've lived through last year. So to me, it's about as optimistic as I think I've ever been when it comes to this offense.
Yeah, haunting, haunted, those are all good adjectives to describe the many years of, in my case, being a fan of the Bears or covering the Chicago Bears. That is the voice of Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. We are at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. It is Rahimi Harris and Grody along with Matt Spiegel here today. I think one of my favorite throws of the day, Tim Jenkins, was the second quarter throw to Luther Burden, 29 yards down the middle of the field, eventually leading to the Cole Kmet touchdown. That's a drop in the bucket right there, Tim.
Yeah, and you got to love it too, because it's in 2 minutes, right? You're sitting there, you're in no huddle, we're trying to get down the field. To me, what the best darn part of it was, we drew up a concept that you can only draw up with a kid like Caleb Williams. We had this, what we call a deep hank, which is where you get 10 yards right over the ball and you sit down, and DJ Moore runs it. So guess what? Everybody jumps it, right? Because it's DJ Moore. And then we slide Burden in on the deep over. We've got Rome on the big stick at eight post, meaning, hey, get to 12 yards, three steps to the corner, and then go hit your head on the goalpost, right? That's how high that post is. And you sneak the deep over from across the field, and he fits it in a window that I'm telling you guys, I don't know if most quarterbacks could hand it through, right? And he fit it down the field. So to me, that was absolutely perfect from Caleb, but it also shows you how excited Ben is to work with a guy like this, because he's drawn that play up because he has Caleb Williams under center. And this is not a shot at Jared Goff, but that's not one you draw up with Goff, right? It's just not. That's not his game. Simultaneously, we saw Jared go into Baltimore last night, right? And you know, work over a pretty good Ravens team. So it's not a shot at Jared, but it is a point of look at what this offense can be when you have Ben Johnson dialing up stuff specifically for a kid as talented as Caleb Williams.
I'm curious, Tim, to your the way you observe this. How much better has the offensive line play looked from week one to two and now three? Because to me, I always felt like this group would eventually gel, and it seems like they are doing so. I know the Cowboys defense is nothing to write home about, but still, I see them getting better.
Yeah, and I would even be, and you know, I get it, right? Russell Wilson tore him apart last week. I would even cautious to say like the Cowboys are that bad of a football team, right? They took the Eagles to the wire. Like, I don't think they're that terrible of a football team. What I would say, listen, my wife's from Texas, so I kind of feel obligated to defend the Cowboys at times. Otherwise, my father-in-law is going to kind of say, "Hey, you're giving her half, and she's keeping the kids." So I will say that I feel obligated to say that. When it comes to that offensive line, though, I'll tell you, I also think we're putting them in a better situation protection-wise. And you know, we talked about, hey, Caleb was maybe struggling with certain stuff. We also got to give him credit. A lot of stuff like that at the NFL level protection-wise goes through the quarterback. So if he's getting them into the right protection looks, I think Ben is learning a lot about this line too. And, hey, how can we manipulate some of these protections to get better two-on-ones? Hey, can we chip? Can we add some help here? So to me, I think – not only are they clicking, but I think our quarterback and our head coach, really coordinator too, right, is learning, hey, how can I manipulate our sets? How can I manipulate our slides to add help where we need it? Which that's another thing to just get excited about, because I'm not sure we've ever really had that in Chicago where it was like, hey, let's go ahead and add help where we need it. Versus last year, it felt like sometimes it's like, nope, these are the plays we run, and if we can't execute them, so be it. That's the player's fault. And that's not true at all, right? It's our job to put them in the best situation, and we're starting to see that consistently, which, you know, I can't tell you the last time I feel like we've seen it on film in Chicago.
We never have. We never have. Tim, been here for decades. And I mean, what you just described was Matt Nagy with one scheme and just doubling down and tripling down and quadrupling down, expecting guys to get it, and they never did. Did you see Ben post game with the incredibly excitable chant in the locker room with the players and Caleb like high-fiving him? It seems like it's a real relationship, you know, like where he's hard on guys, but he's hard on himself and he admits faults with himself. And there seems to be some genuine emotions and dare I say trust going on in a hard coaching relationship. From the outside, it appears that way.
Yeah, I think you're dead on. I think that speech, I think that all that clip, I think it's super genuine. What I'll tell you is I think Caleb is mature enough to understand a guy like Ben Johnson, who's going to be diabolically hard on you, is the best thing for you if you're uber talented. Like, if you want to look at a guy who I think could have benefited from super hard coaching, who I played with, was Sam Bradford. I think sometimes you get these guys where you draft them number one overall, they have all the talent in the world, and I think people are on eggshells to coach them, right? I remember sitting in meeting rooms and Schottenheimer's yelling at me. I'm not even on the field. And it's like, he's coaching Sam Bradford through this kid from Fort Lewis College, right? Like, I get it. If I was going to be a punching bag, I'm more than happy to be a high paid punching bag. That don't bother me one bit. What I will say though, is what Ben is doing for Caleb, I think is the best thing for him. I think Caleb's mature enough as an athlete to understand that. And I think that's where you're seeing that genuineness from the relationship is they both know what the task at hand is. They both know the end goal. And, you know, I think they're both willing to pay the price to get there, which to me is a, you know, just observing what we've had from a coaching perspective, this is the best. What's refreshing about it is there is no, oh, hey, you know, listen, we were only a field goal away or whatever that we used to hear up at the podium. It's like, no, hey, we don't practice hard enough to win games. Like, hearing genuine feedback on where we are as a football team is super refreshing. And then seeing how hard he is on our top players, I think, is also refreshing, because it's just going to, at the end of the day, it's going to make everybody better. And then I think that relationship will long-term, of course, be more, I guess you could say, fun, but it's going to come because we've earned that right, versus just starting there and laughing on the sideline while Caleb Williams rolls his eyes. And then 3 weeks later, you know, you're looking for a job. So to me, it's like, I think it's a much better situation than we've been in.
Tim, thank you so much. Always appreciate your insights, and hopefully the comments all be positive for you this week, sir. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
That's what we're all craving. Just positivity. Positivity.
Well, that means something good has happened.
Yes.
Positivity.
Yes.
I thought that was great stuff.
It was
Tim's
phenomenal.
Really good, but like, you know, the stuff on them starting to work together and really starting to blend the concepts together and the actual linear progress we can look at with Caleb, and it might step backwards again before it steps forwards, but like, I think that speaks to the conversation we had at the beginning of the show, doesn't it?
I loved everything he said because he echoed all my sentiments.
He basically said, Marshall, you're right.
And we didn't even get to the just conceptually a 19-play, 76-yard drive, which took 10 minutes off the clock. I would have just loved his general, because a lot of players in that locker room, guys, had never been a part of a drive like that, professional players. So it was pretty epic and amazing. Coming up next here, from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern on the Raheemy Harrison Grody Show with Matt Spiegel today. Leyland Lawrence coming up in just a little bit. Jed Hoyer is scheduled to join us. He, of course, is the president of baseball operations for your playoff-bound Chicago Cubs. He is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
United Healthcare nurse Crystal checked in on a patient.
We do a routine call after surgery, and I could tell in her voice that she was struggling.
Crystal knew she needed help.
And I knew that this is very serious. This is like septic. This is life-threatening.
And she knew just what to do.
And I called the hospital and said, she's coming in. Here are her labs.
And got her the help she needed.
I see my role at United Healthcare as a life-saving role.
Hear more stories like Crystal's at UHC.com. Benefits, features, and or devices vary by plan area. Limitation and exclusions apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
As we welcome you back into the Raheemy Harris and Grody Show with Matt Spiegel, Layla and Lawrence coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. We are broadcasting live from the Budweiser Brick House Tavern, and we are indeed honored to have with us live at the Brick House Tavern, indeed, the Cubs president of baseball operations for the Chicago Cubs, Jed Hoyer, ladies and gentlemen. Jed, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
We are doing great out here, man. Like, seriously, like, you have been with the Cubs for a long time, a lot of playoffs, a lot of playoff success, but it has been a little while. How good did it feel once you guys officially punched your ticket back into the playoffs after a few years off, obviously?
No, it felt great. You know, it felt like on 2023, we left one on the table. It felt like that was there for the taking. We played terrible for the last 3 weeks of the season, and that's one that I think that part of what felt so good last week was kind of, you know, making it back after that. That was a painful one. We didn't do that this time. We kind of sprinted through the finish line, you know, by sweeping the Pirates, and it felt great. And I felt like the players celebrated as they should. You know, I always say that obviously your goal is to have four or five of those kind of celebrations in a given year, but I think that you should never ever not celebrate that way. This game is hard. You have to you do this for 7+ months. You play 162 games. When there's a chance to celebrate, you should take it.
I agree
every time.
I felt that for you guys this year. You know, I did make the bold prediction that you guys would win the division. We all wanted you guys to win the division. We didn't like seeing what Milwaukee did, but like, I was really on the roller coaster more than ever. So absolutely is. And there are people who push back. What are they partying like? They won the World Series. Getting into the baseball playoffs is still a big damn deal. And you guys can have the ability to win a World Series as a wild card contender.
Yeah, and I think that when you look, like I said, when I was with the Red Sox, we, you know, we sort of every single year were in the postseason, we celebrated every single time. And when I was with the Cubs and
Joe Maddon,
I just think you should never miss an opportunity. Anyone that says you shouldn't celebrate that like that has just never been through the grind of
right.
of doing this every single night, you know, for 6 months plus spring training. It's what you work for. It's what you deserve, and you should let like I think the nature of baseball is it's day in, day out, day in, day out. You never get too high. You never get too low. And so I think when you have that mentality for the entire time, when you finally have a chance to sort of to enjoy it, you need to take it.
When you look at this game, this series, this week, this homestand, everybody's asking the question, where's Kyle Tucker? Is he back here at Wrigley? And what can you tell us about his progress?
Yeah, so he flew back last night. You know, he went to Tampa for a few days just to, you know, work with his physical therapist there, a guy he really trusts. And you know, I've been talking to his agent about it and talking to Kyle about it. We're solving for the same thing, which is getting this guy back and having him, you know, rake in the postseason. And so I think that was an easy decision organizationally for us to do that. He came back last night. He ran yesterday. The hope is that he progresses and we can get him in the lineup for a few games here, get his timing back and get him going. So that's the hope. I don't know anything new today, but that was yesterday, and he's moving in the right direction.
But that was the first time he ran, right, since he's come back? Because I think Craig said Sunday he hadn't run yet, and so
he ran yesterday before he came back. So we're moving in the right direction. He's hit, but hitting and hitting in the big leagues is two different things. So I think getting him some at-bats would be really important.
We were picturing you earlier in the show, and we were talking about it, picturing you with the Theragun down there trying to work the calf yourself and maybe Carter's, yeah, right, exactly,
or massaging the muscles. Here you go, yeah.
But, I mean, you mentioned it there. Easy decision to let him go and work with his own physical therapist. It feels like a rare thing to allow to happen in the middle of a season.
I think if it was a different point in the season, it may be different. I think given where we are and the sort of the we're kind of under the gun, right? I mean, we're like there's finite number of days left to get him healthy, to get him back for the postseason. So I think maybe if we're in June, it would have been a different conversation, different dynamic. I think if you're in June, you're taking your time. It's a little simpler. There's some haste here, and I think that's why it made it pretty simple.
It's been quite a journey of Kyle's time here. You make a very aggressive trade, which works out really nicely during the course of the year, and then here you are. And the whole idea, though, is him raking as a part of the lineup, as you said, in the postseason. Has it been emotional for you, stressful for you, this process?
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. This last series is the first time we lost, more than three in a row all year. We've actually been really consistent, but in a weird way, the offense was so good early. Kyle was a huge part of that. We hit great for the first two and a half months of the season, and then we've actually pitched really well in the second half, and we haven't really hit. And so the hope is that we can get these two sides, together at the same time. But luckily, when our offense struggled, our pitching really stepped up, and the run prevention has been good. But yes, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster in terms of getting both sides right at the same time.
I got to say, I was one of those people who was critical about not getting enough starting pitching at the trade deadline. As of the other day, you have the best starting pitcher rotation ERA in all of baseball in the second half. They've been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the guy pitching tonight, Cade has been just fantastic. And, he's been really consistent. Even this last series against the Reds, Jameson threw great. Colin Ray threw great. I mean, really, it was just a matter of we didn't score runs at the right time. But
so I was dead wrong, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I will say this, though. I understand. Like, I never felt this way up until a few years ago. But the way a game has evolved, it never feels like you have enough pitching. This guys go down more often. Guys throw fewer innings. The first 20-plus years of my career, I felt like you actually got to a place where you felt like you could have excess pitching, or you felt like you were in a stable place from a pitching standpoint. And now I don't think anyone in our jobs ever feel that way. This is the nature of how the game is played, that more injuries and, like I said, fewer innings and more relievers. And so I think you always have that sense of unease. So you're not alone.
I had honestly not realized that this was your first four-game losing streak of the season, one that you're in the midst of right now. That said, it is the Cubs and Mets tonight. Cade Horton against David Peterson, 6:40 start time right over there at Wrigley Field, on the air on The Score at 6:05. Cade Horton goes tonight. Same sort of caution with Cade that you guys have had all year, or is it even more different right now? Because I assume he's the starting pitcher in game one of whatever playoff series, right, Cade Horton?
Yeah, it'll be the same. I mean, I think we've been really consistent throughout the second half. I mean, it's been hard that way, right, because you obviously, you want him on the mound and throwing as many pitches as possible, but also realizing that the goal is to keep him fresh and healthy throughout, and also he's in a kind of uncharted territory given the injuries last year. So I think the pitching group, Craig, all the front office have worked well to get to this place and show caution. We're not going to stop that now.
Looking at the rest of the rotation, how things are kind of lining up, it's a three-game series when you talk about the wild card. Cade Horton, obviously a given. I'm curious to see, can Jameson Taillon now work his way in, or will it be Shota Imanaga and Matt Boyd? What can you tell me about, I guess, preliminary conversations? Because you're going to the playoffs. You're playing in a three-game set. You need three starting pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to make any announcements now, but yeah, JMO's come off and pitched really well. When he's been healthy, he's had some injuries, but obviously he's pitched really well for us. You're going to need a lot of arms, period. So I'm not going to make announcements on this. I'm glad that we're having this discussion. It means our rotation is pitching well and pitching consistently.
All right, let's touch on a couple of playoff roster things then, as long as you're not making any predictions. 11 pitchers, 12 pitchers on a 26-man roster for a three-game series? What do you think?
We've studied it quite a bit. I want to say, like last year, most teams went with 12. I think there was a team that went with 11, a team that went with 13. So we don't have to make any decisions now, but like certainly that's the range you're talking. And then obviously that changes as you move deeper in the playoffs and you play more games. But Those are the kind of discussions we're having, and we will continue to have.
A speed specialist like Billy Hamilton in the minors, is that an option?
Something we'll discuss, yeah.
How about a bat-only player like Moises Ballesteros?
I like it.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited that like you're having that kind of conversation.
Right, it's fun, man.
With Ballesteros, because, I mean, he's really, he can really hit. I think he's come up, he's shown, you know, why we've been so high on him, why we've been reluctant to move him. Obviously, he can really hit both for power and for contact, which is really impressive. He's a really good player.
And last thing, anything promised to Carlos Santana when he came here on September 1st?
No, I mean, like I said, we have time to have these discussions.
Well, so. I got to try.
I think, Jed, that another question though about players who aren't with the team right now, like Daniel Palencia and Miguel Amaya, are they in the plans, like,
there we go,
to come back at least this week? I mean, what are we looking at with those two guys?
I think with Daniel, he's done well. I think he feels good. So hopefully we'll knock on wood, we'll get him out there at some point this week and get that going. With Miguel, it's hard. He hasn't had a chance to really, get going, get in playing. And like almost like you asked me the question with Tucker, like we're just running out of games and days to do things. And so I feel for him. He's had a trying season for a guy that was really on the upswing and I think has a really bright future, but it's a shame what's happened to his season.
One more question, and then we'll let you scoot over to work because you got work here tonight. You have really important stuff going on tonight. As for the discussion about Cade Horton and whether or not he would start the first game of a series, does it come into the conversation that he's a rookie and you're not sure if you want somebody inexperienced, or is it the opposite, or does that ever come into the debate that you guys probably are having about who you'd like to start?
I think everything kind of comes into the mix. I mean, the honest truth is, like, how to weigh things like that is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's been our best pitcher in the second half. I mean, that's obvious. But how you weigh those different things is really hard because we've seen rookies, step up and pitch incredibly well in those situations and not. And we've seen veterans pitch really well in those situations and not. So how do you weigh those things is really challenging.
Wanted to ask you about Buddy Bailey, one of the great managers in the history of the minor leagues.
Yeah, Buddy passed away last night. I just wanted to say, I was with Buddy in Boston, and then here, and I think as we're talking about Cade and Bally and Matt Shaw and all these young guys, we have Pete, all these guys we have playing for us. I just think we can't forget just the influence that the guys in the minor leagues have, and Buddy more than anybody. I think he has the third most wins in minor league history. So anyway, I just wanted to, say Godspeed to Buddy, and just to say, listen, as we think about all these young players and talk about these young players, there's minor league managers and coaches and all these guys in player development that have a huge impact on them, and no one more than Buddy over his time here.
I remember when you and Theo came in and you talked about how the teaching and the character building had to be the same at every level as you grew guys and eventually delivered them to the majors. And Buddy was a big part of that.
I was going to say he was a kind of almost a blueprint for that. I think he was a tough old school manager, and the guys, they grew up. When they played for him, they grew up. And I think that's really important. I mean, these kids are young when we get them in the minor leagues and impressionable, and guys like Buddy imprint them very well.
I'm sorry that you lost a friend, but thank you so much for sharing that, those really great words, and thanks for being here with us, man.
I appreciate it, guys. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Jed Hoyer. Thanks,
hopefully you're as excited as we are.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. He's the president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, out here at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern. It is Rahimi, Harris, and Grody with Matt Spiegel. We have our final segment coming up next. I was actually in the bathroom while we were show prepping our final segment. What are we doing in the next segment, by the way?
I have no idea.
It's going to be a surprise.
The executive producer, Ray Diaz, knows. He is the mystery man.
What are we doing next, Ray?
We're going to share our takeaways from that great conversation with Jed Hoyer.
Oh, we're going to talk about Jed Hoyer more. It's coming up next from the Brickhouse Tavern here on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Bet 365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet 365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
United Healthcare nurse Crystal checked in on a patient.
We do a routine call after surgery, and I could tell in her voice that she was struggling.
Crystal knew she needed help.
And I knew that this is very serious. This is like septic. This is life-threatening.
And she knew just what to do.
And I called the hospital and said, she's coming in. Here are her labs.
And got her the help she needed.
I see my role at United Healthcare as a life-saving role.
Hear more stories like Crystal's at UHC.com. Benefits, features, and or devices vary by plan area. Limitation and exclusions apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Man, we are broadcasting live from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville today. Rahimi Harrison Grody. We got Matt Spiegel here coming up very shortly. We are going to transition with Layla Rahimi and Lawrence Holmes as they are back at our downtown Chicago studios. So we'll get to them here in just a little bit. But we just had Jed Hoyer on, and he was good news, Jed, because we can now confirm that Kyle Tucker is in town. He has been running, he has been hitting, and he may be worked into games here. The final six games of the season, you could see Kyle Tucker back. Does that guarantee that he will be able to play in the postseason? No, but Spiegs, that was heartening to hear.
Yeah, no, Marshall asked him directly, and he gave you the update based on Tucker getting here yesterday, and he hadn't talked to Craig yet today about it and gotten a medical update. But, yeah, so, I mean, if Kyle Tucker can play in 2, 3, 4 of these six games, then maybe he can get in there. That was certainly that was certainly news and certainly a bit positive. I thought it was interesting, Marshall, when he said, you know, that was an easy organizational decision to let him go down there. And then I followed up. I'm like, easy? Really? And he said, well, if it had been earlier in the season, that's not an easy decision. Like, we're used to guys going to their own hitting coach or pitching coach in the offseason, but going to your own medical person in the middle of the season is a different thing.
I think why I agree with him on this and understand where he's coming from is because of the clock. The clock is running. The countdown to the playoffs is on. And he's like, what can we do to make sure, to ensure that Kyle Tucker is available game one come next Tuesday? And I think Kyle Tucker probably had a very honest conversation. He's like, I got a guy who does me well back in Tampa. And they're like, all right, well, if you think he can get you better than what we're getting you, because they were getting nowhere. Let's be very clear. At that point in time, before he went down to Tampa,
yeah,
nothing was improving. It was literally standing there on a treadmill and going nowhere.
Some people have made like the historical comp to 16 when Schwarber was coming all the way back from the knee.
Yep.
But he was with Cubs people out in Arizona at the complex in Mesa working before he then helicoptered his way back in to the World Series and started spitting on sliders from Andrew Miller.
Unbelievable. Like, it was just like, that was a clinic that guy put on. Just the legend grew. Just as a little note, too, on Kyle Tucker, for people who are not aware of this, last year he missed 3 months, did Kyle Tucker, towards the end of the season with a shin injury. He returned for just about the entire month of September, and he had a 1.041 OPS. So he is, at least there is a track, I don't like that he was hurt last year, but there's a track record of him immediately going back to being Kyle Tucker, and a lot of that is credited to the fact that he is low maintenance when it comes to getting himself back into to the way he, as you talked about earlier, the way he prepares for a game.
So yeah,
it's a light load.
We'll have to hope that that's the case.
Yeah.
I thought Jed might have broken a little news just contextually, and you guys tell me. I think, Marshall, did you say, so you were talking about Cade Horton and how, and Cade's going tonight, and yeah, so Cade Horton will probably be your game one starter, right? You threw that in there as if it was fait accompli.
I wanted to see him refute it.
He did not.
And he did not.
He did not refute it, and he said, yeah, I mean, we'll probably just keep going in order. So it's Cade and then Shota, and so just him just kind of just going along with you and saying, probably keep going in order. That makes me think that Cade is going to get number one. I've been a guy saying I thought Shota was going to get number one. A lot of big game experience, veteran. Padres worse against lefties than they are righties, so I had that in there too. But Cade game two, that sounded like a GM excited to have Cade get game one.
I think the way Cade Horton is pitching right now, if he's on your team, unless you've got a guy like Crochet, Scooble, I can name like the aces, he's got to make the start. On this team, with the way those two guys have been pitching, Shota Imanaga and Matthew Boyd. He's got to be the guy.
Yeah, but I disagree with you about Shota because Shota's always been a fly ball guy. He was a fly ball guy in Japan, fly ball guy here. Now it's been more home runs, especially in Cincy, which is a bandbox. At this place, which is not a home run friendly park,
not anymore.
These last 2 years, mm-hmm. Shota knowing what to do, I feel great about Shota being a playoff pitcher in this park.
I think you're making a grave mistake when you say stuff like that. He gave up two home runs. Listen, two home runs his last home start. He gave up two home runs the start before that at home. So just, I know it's a shorter sample size because I'm talking about his last eight starts, in which home or away, guess what? He's given up at least one bomb.
Go back to those games. How many runs did he give up in those games?
In one of those games, he gave up three runs. In one of those games, he gave up three runs.
Okay.
Guess what? Three runs in a playoffs in the first five innings will get you beat.
Well, but
in a playoff series,
that's who he is, and that's what he is. And he knows to give up solo homers, and he challenges in spots like that. But Shota's getting one of the games at the very least. Like they're not going to. I don't think you can go Boyd game two right now. I think the two guys that you have to make sure get starts are Cade and Shota.
But okay, so Shota over Jameson Taillon then.
For me, yeah.
Because Taillon was the guy who used to give up all the home runs. And Shota kind of is like, oh, you're hurt, I'll take your place, I'll give up the bombs.
Taillon to back both of them up, guys. Taillon is your
that.
Bulk
I
guy
love
to back
that. Guys,
both
we got a break. What I would have loved to have seen is if Matthew Boyd was still pitching like he had been pitching and having the debate between Matthew Boyd and Cade Horn.
I think he's out of gas.
Saying, like, I wish we were having that debate, but obviously we're not because, as you said, Marshall, he's probably out of gas. All right. When we return, we will do transition with Lawrence Holmes and Layla Rahimi, who are back in our, as I said, and I just love saying, back at our downtown Chicago studios. They will join us next, Rahimi, Harris, and Grody with Matt Spiegel, live from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Heather is a nurse practitioner from UnitedHealthcare.
We meet patients wherever they live.
During a house call, she found Jack had an issue.
Jack's blood pressure was dangerously high.
It was 217 over 110.
So they got Jack to the hospital and got him the help he needed.
He had had a stent placed in his heart, preventing a massive heart attack.
If it wasn't for my guardian angel, I wouldn't be here.
Hear more stories like Jack's at unitedhealthcare.com. Benefits, features, and or devices vary by plan. Area limitation and exclusions apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.